Welcome, everyone, to the Deep Dive. Today, we're plunging into some really ancient texts that, well, frankly, they felt incredibly relevant to right now. Our mission, if you will, is to unpack how these old truths can maybe give us some fresh perspectives on challenges we all face. Things like suffering, how we give advice, and importantly, how we strengthen our faith. I was really struck by how one character's advice given thousands of years ago still feels like a warning for us. I mean, think about it. Have you ever been in a really tough spot? Or watch someone you care about go through something awful? How do we handle life's troubles, the ones that seem unavoidable? And how can we genuinely help others when they're hurting? We're going to explore this using a really rich source of wisdom, but we'll also need to look critically at how that wisdom gets applied, or sometimes misapplied. Okay, so let's set the scene. We're going way back into a very old text, looking at a pretty intense conversation. We're focusing on this figure, Eliphaz, and his take on why people suffer. Now, Eliphaz has this core argument. It sounds wise, you know, on the surface, but it kind of misses something vital.
He basically believes trouble doesn't just pop up out of nowhere. For him, suffering is often, maybe usually, a direct result of being foolish or sinful. He says it straight out. For wrath killeth the foolish man, and envy slayeth the silly one. Pretty blunt. And he paints a clear picture of the fallout for these foolish people, right? Yeah, their kids aren't safe, they get crushed, nobody helps. Their harvest, gone. Eaten by the hungry, their stuff, stolen. Stark. And he drops that line, man is born unto trouble as the sparks fly upward. It sounds universal, like suffering is just part of being human. But in his framework, the strong implication is, well, you probably brought it on yourself. It's almost like he thinks suffering equals sin. A simple equation.
Right. And what's interesting is Eliphaz doesn't just diagnose the problem. He offers what he sees as the solution. He tells Job, the person suffering in this story, basically, look, seek God, commit your cause to him. And then he launches into this description of God's attributes. It's a really powerful picture of the divine. He talks about God doing great things and unsearchable, marvelous things without number. You know, big picture stuff. And he gives concrete examples, too. God giveth rain upon the earth and sendeth waters upon the fields. And God has the power to set up on high those that be low, that those which mourn may be exalted to safety. So he's definitely showing God's power for creation, for restoration. It makes sense. But, and this is key to his argument, he also emphasizes God's power to stop the wicked in their tracks. He says God disappointeth the devices of the crafty, and he taketh the wise in their own craftiness. And here's where he really connects it to Job's situation, or thinks he does. He declares, behold, happy is the man whom God correcteth. Therefore despise not thou the chastening of the Almighty. Now, that word chastening, it suggests discipline, like a father guiding a child. It's not necessarily punishment for sin, which is a distinction Eliphaz seems to blur. Then he lists all these amazing benefits that come from accepting this correction. He says, God maketh sore and bindeth up. He woundeth and his hands make whole. Healing, basically. And deliverance from six troubles, yea, and seven, there shall no evil touch thee. Protection from everything, famine, war, gossip, destruction. He even promises peace, security, lots of kids, a long life. It's the full package, really, for those who, in his view, get right with God's correction.
Wow. It really is a compelling vision he paints. Complete restoration, all these blessings, if you just accept the correction. But knowing the bigger story of Job, this solution, even though it sounds so complete, it feels like something's missing. Where does this very sincere, maybe even beautifully poetic wisdom, where does it go wrong?
You nailed it. That's the heart of the problem. There's truth there, absolutely. God does bless, God restores, God redeems brokenness. That's foundational. But here's the crucial miss. Eliphaz assumes way too much. The big irony, which anyone reading the whole story knows, is that Job's suffering wasn't punishment, not at all. It was a test, a profound spiritual struggle happening behind the scenes, something Job couldn't possibly see from where he sat.
Oh, okay. So God does restore and redeem, but it's just wrong to assume all suffering is punishment we deserve. It sounds like Eliphaz, despite his good intentions, just missed that deeper layer. Yes, trouble is part of life. That resonates for sure. We all know that. And there's definitely value in God's discipline, right? That idea, whom God correcteth, he loveth, that's echoed elsewhere, like Proverbs, Hebrews. It's about a father's love, not just judgment. But Eliphaz applied it wrongly here, not just too soon, but inaccurately for Job. So real wisdom seems to need understanding before diagnosis. You can't just apply a formula.
Exactly. And that brings us right to today. How do we take this ancient scenario and apply it now? Critically, how does this understanding actually strengthen our faith and maybe guide our obedience? I think there are about five key takeaways. First, put away the spiritual prescription pad. Eliphaz acted like a doctor who misdiagnosed. When people we know are in deep pain, what they often need first is just empathy. Presence, not necessarily a lecture or even a Bible verse right off the bat. This isn't just about being nice, it's about humble obedience, trusting God's timing for answers instead of feeling we have to supply them. It actually builds our faith to rely on Him like that. Second, check your if-then thinking. Just because someone's life is falling apart doesn't automatically mean they sinned or failed. It's so important to listen first, really listen, with humility. Without jumping to conclusions, sometimes our role isn't to fix it, but just to sit with someone in their suffering. Trusting God holds the bigger picture. This deepens faith by refining how we see God's justice and sovereignty. It moves us past simplistic cause and effect.
That's huge, checking those assumptions. It is so easy to fall into that trap, isn't it? We want answers. We want things to make sense, especially when someone we care about is hurting. But then there's that other piece, God's timing. It often feels slow or just different from ours. How does that connect with Eliphaz's promises? How does dealing with that strengthen faith?
Great question, because Eliphaz definitely implied quick results. So third, God does redeem, but it's not always on our schedule. Eliphaz basically said, Job, do this, and bam. Restoration, like a vending machine. But real life shows us healing, redemption. It often takes time, sometimes a very long time. God might be working on something much bigger, something deeper, that we just can't see it. Understanding this fosters a more resilient faith. It teaches trust in God's sovereign plan, even when we want instant relief. It encourages patient obedience, knowing restoration happens on God's clock, not ours. Fourth, know the difference between comfort and correction. This is subtle but critical. Eliphaz thought he was helping, comforting Job with these truths, but he was actually correcting him and piling on more pain. So the question for us becomes, okay, right now, does this person need truth or do they just need presence? Discerning that is an act of obedience to God's leading. Sometimes the most faithful thing isn't words, but just being there, a listening ear, a shoulder. Sometimes silence is the answer.
That one, comfort versus correction. It sounds simple, but wow. In the middle of someone's crisis, how do you actually figure that out? Either like a sign, a red flag that says, okay, time for presence, not preaching.
Yeah, that is the hard part. Often I think the red flag is actually our own discomfort, our urge to fix it, to say something wise, to fill the silence. When someone's in that raw, immediate pain, any kind of spiritual diagnosis, no matter how true in general, can feel like judgment. The main need right then is often just to feel seen, heard, maybe just held. Not analyzed. It's about reading that specific person in that specific moment, which brings us to fifth. Real wisdom needs compassion, always. The best advice, the best support comes not just from knowing principles, but from really trying to understand the person, their unique situation, their heart. Wisdom without compassion, it can wound, not heal. Eliphaz is proof of that. This holistic approach, trying to blend truth with love, actually strengthens our faith because it mirrors God's own character. And it encourages obedience because we're acting in a way that genuinely serves others, reflecting the gospel itself. So when we look back at that key line, behold, happy is the man whom God correcteth, we see its power. It is a profound truth. But its application requires immense wisdom and context. It's not a hammer. Thinking critically like this, digging deeper into scripture, that strengthens faith. It leads to obedience that's informed, not just reactive. So yes, committing our cause to God, like Eliphaz said, is vital. But combine that with a nuanced view of suffering, of God's work, that builds resilience. Those ultimate promises of deliverance, of peace, they anchor us even when life is messy and complex because they're rooted in God's unchanging character. That motivates us to follow Him humbly.
This has been incredibly insightful, really peeling back the layers on that ancient exchange. It highlights such a crucial difference, doesn't it, between advice that's just well-intentioned and wisdom that's truly compassionate. Understanding this story helps us navigate our own stuff, sure, but maybe even more importantly, how we show up for others. It's less about having the perfect answer, maybe, and more about showing up with empathy first.
Absolutely, and I think faith grows stronger, not when we have all the easy, simple answers, but when we wrestle with the complexities, trusting a God who does redeem, but often in ways and on timelines we just don't expect. That wrestling, that discerning how to apply truth with love, that deepens our reliance on Him. It encourages an obedience that's humble, thoughtful, and ultimately more reflective of His heart.
So here's something to reflect on as we wrap up. When someone you care about is really hurting, how might this deep dive shift how you approach them? Maybe focusing first on compassion, on just being present before jumping to solutions?